Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com. All right, we get to catch up with some legislators. This week, they are in their transmittal break. They had a lot of things going on last week, and then this weekend, hopefully, they just had that whole weekend to kind of decompress a little bit and breathe, and I know a ton of stuff to catch up on. We're going to catch up with Carrie Seekins-Crow here today, House District 39. That's sort of the Billings area. You know, we talk about, she's out there leading the charge for women in a lot of ways, and you can't, you can't separate the discussion here of how our laws can or should reflect our moral values. We talk about that today on Voices of Montana. Yes, Carrie Seekins-Crow is in studio today. Good morning,
Carrie. Good morning. It's so good to be here. So good to be back in Billings. Been able to spend time with my granddaughter, which is my favorite thing to do, and my family, which is my next favorite thing to do. So it's been a wonderful weekend. So
going to give a shout out to Michael as well, who's in studio. Michael Crow, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, we got his mic on even. Uh-oh, watch out. Yeah, that's trouble. You know that's trouble now. I already said hello. We already heard from you. You're going to get the most awkward questions, sir. You okay with that?
Sure.
No, he's not. He is not. His voice said sure, but his head went, no, I'm not. Okay. Anyway, thank you for being here, too. And thank you for supporting your lovely wife through this time. What's it been like? It's been, because this is your third session as
this
well.
This is my third session.
Nothing super new to you, but.
Well, I don't know. Every session is brand new. Yeah. The people, the process, the legislation, some of the opposition, it's always new. And I, you know, my first session, of course, I only knew two things. And those two things were, I didn't know what I was doing and I wasn't going to wear a face mask. And now, and you don't know what you don't know. But now that I know what I didn't know, I don't know what to do with it. I mean, and everything is relationship oriented in Helena. And I do appreciate that because I'm not real great at politics, but I do believe my strengths are in understanding policy and then also people. And so, you know, maybe next session I'll be better at the politics. But politics a lot of times is about power. And that's not why I'm in politics. It's just not my thing. I don't quite understand how to gain power.
You kind of have to, I guess, take the good with the bad. And politics comes with trying to accomplish some things. And you put yourself out there and trying to accomplish some things that others probably would not pick up the mantle on. But it has to do with how this country is trying to redefine our women. I think it's also, and this has been going on for quite some time, how to redefine our morality in a lot of ways, too. That is an area that, well, you're going to get some attention, that's for sure.
It has been very interesting, of course, because where my foundation comes from, of course, you know, biblical, but also, you know, coming from a family, very family-oriented, and just having that foundation, when the issues were brought to my attention, if I would carry these bills, it was, of course, yes, I will carry the bills. And the one that we've been already talking about this morning is House Bill 121 about women's private spaces, that women's private spaces should be for women. And then also House Bill 300, which is that women's sports should be for women and girls and the female bodies. And so those are the issues that I'm fighting for. And I'm watching as the opposition's narrative kind of changes as our narrative gets stronger, that because we were trying to be nice, like, oh, well, yeah, a guy wants to swim. Well, we don't. And it was so the issue that you see is that females are the ones who have the problem if they don't allow a man, male body to swim in the pool, you know, or in the competition.
Accept him 100% without question.
Yep. Yeah. Let him change in front of women. Let him have women's spaces. Let him compete. And of course, the argument is, oh, there's only a few of them. Well, one man competing in a track meet, it not only displaces one woman, but it's track meet after track meet. One man competing in a volleyball game, that displaces whole other teams. So it's not just one person. I mean, I think the number, you know, over 800 medals have been won by men in female sports in the last 9 months. Those are big numbers, but it transforms something that's absolutely beautiful. I mean, like women's college basketball, what a phenomenal thing to watch. And it's its own sport. It's not men's basketball. It's not meant to be. And women do not play on the men's basketball team for a good purpose, but they play on the women's basketball team. And how fun is that to watch? And I mean, March Madness, they get as many views as the men do anymore. It's so much fun to watch all of that. But if we allow men, male bodies to be participating, then we're going to transform women's sports forever. And that's not fair. And, you know, I spent the weekend with my granddaughter and she loves soccer. I mean, just running and kicking a ball and she loves swimming. And so she's like, Grandma, we got to go swimming again. And I want her to have those same opportunities that I had growing up. I played basketball in high school and I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the tallest. I wasn't the best shot, but there were things that I did really well. I was really good at playing defense, really good at boxing out. And we figured out how to be a team and gel as a team. So I was able to start, but male bodies could have easily taken my place because they would have been stronger. They would have been faster. They would have been more competitive. But I had to work to get to the point where I was playing basketball. And that's what's so important, though, is that we allow women to have that opportunity and they're not taken over by men competing in female sports.
This is the one that I think strangest to the general public as well. And the vast majority, I think it's upwards of 3/4 of the population, does not see this as a fit. There was somebody who put it this way: women's sports is not a backup for mediocre males to compete in, so to speak. Myself, I just don't get it. I just don't understand how this can even be a national argument where they're making points that these transgender males belong in women's sports. It's very obvious that they do not belong in that arena.
Well, the argument is that trans women are women, but trans women are men who want to appear as women, which is, people have that opportunity. That's not what I'm trying to take away from people, to identify as they want to identify. But that does not mean that I am going to change my stance on fighting for women's sports or fighting for women's private spaces. Accommodations can and should be made, especially for private spaces, but at the same time, they should not be done at the peril of women and women's private spaces and women's sports. Title IX did what it should have done and continues to do. But if we allow men to compete in women's sports, we are going to transform Title IX and women's sports forever until we get back on track. And, you know, it was beautiful to listen to the president, you know, with my talking points. I was like, thank you, President Trump. I really appreciate this. In the inauguration, of course, all of us were cheering for that. I was actually in Washington, D.C., watching it from Senator Dane's office at that time because they had canceled the inauguration. But a lot of us were cheering when he started talking through these points. So we are going to protect women. We're going to protect their spaces. We're going to protect their sports. And we're going back to there's two genders. And I think that that's given us in our state the ability to, you know, be buoyed up as well with this discussion instead of having to argue points that we shouldn't have to even argue anymore. But here we are.
Let's talk about the bill that is the vehicle for carrying this forward. Give us the status on that. And also, you know, as these things, they go through hearings, you're going to see opposition, you're going to see support. What was the dynamic? What was the takeaway from both of those arguments? So what did the bill do specifically? And, you know, we want to talk about how tight it is constitutionally, but I'm curious as to how people are framing arguments both for and against trying to limit women to women's sports or men to male sports.
Well, the bill right now, it's gone through the House, gone through the Senate, and it's waiting the signature of the governor, which is going to happen here soon. That's House Bill 121. House Bill 300 has been heard in the House, passed the House floor. It's been heard in committee in the Senate, and it's going to go to the Senate floor. We just had to wait for transmittal because the Senate was working on the Senate bills at that point. And then it'll go to the governor for the governor's signature at that point. House Bill 121 talks about women's private spaces. And it, of course, it's constitutional. Of course, it's protecting women. But we've got a very interesting Supreme Court. Of course, it's going to get sued. We already knew that it did. One of the things that some folks wanted to do was state that, well, if somebody has what they were calling aftermarket body parts, they've already had the surgery, then we can do a carve out there. But the problem is that we've got a definition of male and female, and that's based on chromosomes. And then it would have not stood up in court because it would have kind of folded back on itself. And it's that's not what this is about. This is about protecting women, not protecting those folks that want to say that they're women, because if you protect one person, you have to protect even that man who's fully dressed and acts like a man going into a women's facility. Because that's one thing that the opposition would never admit to, that men people identifying as men are that they shouldn't be able to go into these spaces. They said, well, we don't know where he feels safest. We don't know where that person could, feels like he needs to identify that day. But never did they ever talk about us as women being safe. Never did they talk about what accommodations would look like. It was always what is going to uplift this, you know, small percentage. And they kept saying, well, it's not really happening out there, but it is really happening. That's why it's an issue. If it really wasn't a big deal, then why are they making it a big deal? It's because they are not interested in protecting women and they are not interested at this time in accommodations. So that's what that bill does. House Bill 300, we do already have a law in our state that says that in high school that men cannot participate in women's sports. But this is also, this goes from kindergarten all the way up. So it's generally applicable, but it also talks about spaces as well, locker rooms and bathrooms and the women's accommodations under Title IX as well. So that's where those two bills are right now.
What kind of clarity is needed here? I mean, it seems to me the simplest and probably the most necessary of clarity is just that simple definition of what is a male and what is a female from the science standpoint. If that can be accomplished, how much clarity does that give to the rest of the things that are trying to be kind of right-sided when we come to the morality that we are allowed to advocate for as people of a society?
Well, I think this is impacting education. It's impacting our medical decisions that we make as well, because if we do not identify what science has already ascertained, then what kind of decisions are we coming out with on the other end? And we're seeing that, I mean, in education, so I sit on education as well, that in medicine, if I can just sway a little bit where some of this is going, that if we're making the wrong foundational assumptions about male and female, that it now becomes a gender identity and not actual sex, we're seeing parents then losing their ability to direct their kids' education, medical, and religious upbringing. And that's where it gets very serious there, because both our education and our medical foundations are stating that the first foundation there, the first fundamental value is parents are bad, not parents are good, and we need to support parents, but they're bad, so we're going to take kids away from their parents making those decisions. That has to do with gender identity, religion, medical decisions. And so that's what we're fighting as well within the hospitals and with education. And it's all wrapped around these big moral foundational decisions, because they say, oh, there's parents out there who abuse their kids. Of course there are. And those are the kids we need to protect. But that's from an abusive relationship, not because their parents want to teach your kids about Jesus Christ, or they want to teach them that there's only two sexes, and or, you know, Muhammad, or, you know, whatever else there is, or want to teach them that actually science exists. This is what science says, or teach them rhetoric, or have them read, you know, history, and not be, you know, manipulated by our schools and even our doctors. It's very sad to see this trend about taking kids, separating them from their parents when they go in for an appointment, so that they have access. I mean, even asking kids in these, do you feel safe at home? Are there guns at home? do your parents allow you to identify? How do you identify today? What can we do to help you, you know, with your identification? And so if a child is really struggling, we're not helping them foundationally with their mental health, with the trauma that's going on. And that's what we're seeing right now is a social contagion of gender dysphoria that's going on.
You're getting a lot of pushback, too. I mean, to the point where there are groups in Montana that would label you as a villain.
Yeah.
That is language in my mind that goes beyond.
Well, of course, those of us who get the villain of the week, I mean, that's my pronoun. Now, if you can remember that, that'll be fine.
That's the pronoun?
That's the pronoun now. Next month, it'll be Beth Dutton. If you could refer to me, my pronouns as Beth Dutton, that would be fine then, too. But the problem...
You're funny. I need some clarity on this, though, okay? I'm going to refer to you as representative. How's
there you
that?
Go. That's fine. Yeah.
Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow is with us here in her third session, serving now House District 39. A lot of bills carried by Carrie. They're not all... related to this morality question that we're discussing here today, but the big ones are, and these are important as well, Carrie, and I thank you for carrying them too, because it's important that we have a discussion about what these will lead to. I'm just going to repeat some of these stories out here that I have covered in the past, and they're just headlines. Kindergartner sent home with masturbation assignment. I looked into these. These are true. North Carolina school faces fallout for letting drag queen straddle student. Saw that. That was not a pretty sight. Oh, here is the School District of Philadelphia. This goes back to 2022. They encourage teachers to attend a conference on kink, BDSM, trans sex, and masturbation sleeves. Why are teachers going to conferences like that, you may ask yourself. Here's the one I reference frequently. This is a California mom who has actually sued and is blaming the LGBTQ coaching that their school gave to her student, her child, unbeknownst to her, and it didn't end well. There was a teen suicide in that. These things are no small matters for us to gloss over. Oh, we can't have a discussion about where our morality is in government.
Well, and that's what's so interesting. We hear the argument. It's not happening in Montana, but it is. There are stories, parents coming to me, telling me that they're seeing their kids get some of these assignments. Now, we do have some superintendents, and in fact, our superintendent here said, if you hear of this, let me know. And so that's the deal I've got with him. But we've also heard things like, if we just would pay teachers more, then they wouldn't be quitting. But a lot of the teachers, in fact, almost all the teachers to whom I've spoken have said, I had to quit because I couldn't lie to parents anymore. I was told that I had to lie to them about what pronouns their child was using. I've heard that they could not teach those things that they were being asked to teach. And I get it because I taught math in college for years. And way back when I was teaching in the early 2000s, it was, make sure you include, diversity in math. I'm like, no, math is pretty straightforward. I'm just going to teach math. But they wanted these concepts or environmental math or, things that had such a huge political overtone to them. And teachers... I mean, it was beautiful when I was growing up, 400 years ago. We didn't know where our teachers stood politically, but we had great discussions. And now it's really awesome because some of my teachers really, really support me and some of them block me, which is fine. I mean, that's the beauty about our country, isn't it? But what we're seeing now is in our schools, where we say children should not have human sexuality instruction in kindergarten, but you'll see signs up on the door. This is a safe place for all religions, races, da da da, and then it'll say genders and sexes, and so they are seeing it every day. You're seeing the flags, the pride flags being flown, which should not be flown because that's about sexuality, and kids just need to be getting that at home and not in our schools.
It's an indoctrination at an institutional level, and we are letting it happen. Let's take a call. Skip listening in Hamilton on KLYQ. Skip, Citizen Skip, good to hear from you. You're on the air here with Carrie Seekins-Crow.
Oh, thank you, Tom, and I hope you all had a nice weekend. And Terry, I hope you're able to finally take a deep breath and this week get your thoughts together, because the things that you present, I've seen excerpts of them, and I really appreciate your straight talk legislation that you present. And if people listen to you, it's not nebulous, it's straight talk and easy to understand.
Thank
and
you.
Common sense is the way I was brought up. And so meanwhile, I wanted to also tell you that I noticed that you are on local government, and you are also on education.
Yes, sir.
And has committees. And we just had to exercise something over here in Ravalli County, which when it comes to, for instance, our central committee, is has been almost laughable for a couple of years. And I wanted you to know that we finally got through having to, and I'm just, I'm a layman. I'm not a member of the central committee. I'm not an elected captain. But we just got through two nights, last Thursday and Friday, of crunching it down to do a replacement for Representative District 87.
Yeah, Ron Marshall. Yep.
Who resigned, right? And it was amazing. We got down to three names, and they will be chosen, choose one today, the commissioners will, and which involves our local government. And it's quite a process, and it doesn't happen a lot. And because where I live is in, you probably know Representative David Beatty. He's my representative, mm-hmm. Colonel Beatty. And then I also live in Ellsworth territory. So Ravalli County becomes quite a melting pot for some of these issues that come up. And so this afternoon we will be finding out who our commissioners choose uh-huh. as a person to go back and hit the ground running next Monday to make sure the people in 87 have representation.
Yes, so. It is very interesting what y'all are going through over there. And we did have to do that ourselves when Mallory Strumswold resigned last session. So we did that here in Yellowstone County. But very interesting process. And, of course, whoever comes has got to, you know, gear up and come in at halftime. But it will be interesting. And so at that point, they'll be voting for bills. So I hope I've heard the three names that y'all are bringing forward, and hopefully we get the best one.
Skip, do you have anything?
I know all of them will, any one of them will hit the ground running with an understanding of the process. I want to tell you that at that meeting, the new executive director of the Republican Party, Tyler Newcomb, himself came, and he sat right next to the elected president, and we made sure that all. And by the way, we disseminated a whole bunch of rules at that meeting. I say we because a lot of people are understanding exactly what the little contentions are about. They straightened them out. They had a good vote. And then also, for instance, Lola.
Sheldon Galloway.
Thank you. Yep. She made the trip all the way from Great Falls to make sure she was there and make sure we got through it appropriately. And it felt good.
Good.
That we could crunch it down and do this so that the process worked. So thank you for what you're doing, because you're addressing issues that finally need to get put to bed.
Well, I sure do appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much. I can't do this alone. It's a team. We are a team. We must continue to be a team. Again, I can't be a lone voice out there, and I'm okay, bringing forward the issues, but I'm also very thankful and very blessed that I, on a regular basis, get to see my team, get to hear from them. They encourage me, they hold my arms up when we are, going across the Red Sea, right? Yeah. And they're there to encourage, to uplift, to pray for me, and to coach me. And pastors and organizations and mothers and fathers who believe it's really important. So I'm blessed exceedingly abundantly, and I'm always glad to work with Montanans.
That's a smart way to do this when you're making decisions, is to get informed by a wide variety of people there as well.
Yes.
Catching up with one of our representatives, Carrie Seekins-Crow, House District 39, as the legislature is in this transmittal break. Tomorrow, we're talking tariffs, right? Are they helping or are they hurting the economy? What do you think? What kind of prices will you see go up in this, the impact of the trade wars? Tino Sonora, that's Dr. Robert Sonora from the University of Montana, will join us, and it's some Tino time for tomorrow. And again, tariffs, it's tough to understand. I should mention as well that we are going to have the General Consul of Canada on the program for about 30 minutes on Wednesday, too. So we've got a lot of stuff leading up to that. Again, back in the studio here with Representative Kerry Seekins-Crowe, and good to see you. I'm glad you're here. Michael Crowe is in studio as well, and he's going to get a question or two thrown his way before too long. I want to go back to some of the things. Now, you hit about relationships and how important that is. And anybody who's watching, and I've always encouraged people to do that, legmt.gov. You can stream the hearings later or on live. You can catch up with a ton of that stuff as well. And it's very, very helpful. It's educational in a lot of ways too. And there's not as much, there's a lot more cooperation, I think, than people come to know about the legislature.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is a lot of the work gets done in the hallway, having those conversations in the hallway. Because if you watch a hearing, you're noticing it's not really a conversation. It's testimony and then some questions, but not really the negotiations, the collaboration, the understanding. So the hearings help us understand. But when you start hearing, you know, the same testimony over and over again, it actually loses its appeal. So if you are going to go testify, I would encourage you to work with those around you. Sometimes you only get a couple minutes, but work with those that are also going up there, so you're not saying the same thing over and over again. It's not that we're not listening. It's just that you're not being as effective as you could to help teach us, because we have so much to learn as legislators. I mean, I also say we're running a marathon at a sprint's pace, and some days I can see 80 pieces of legislation. And I, over the years, have learned more because the issues are still the issues, but, you know, understanding everything from right to repair or unemployment benefits or, you know, taxes, it becomes very complicated. I mean, alcohol. I sit on business and labor. I mean, alcohol licensing, education funding, and our prison systems. Those three things are very, very complicated to understand how those things work and how those dynamics get pulled together. So it is having those people you know you can talk to, and they're not going to steer you wrong off of your value system and tell you the truth, and then, you know, figure out, is this where I want to compromise or not? Because sometimes you'll talk to certain organizations and they want to steer you away from your value system, and they do it in a very sly way. But I think that you learn those things. You learn where those pitfalls are, and you learn where you can, you know, gird your, you know, uh-huh. Figure out where your strength is too.
Trust is that currency that you guys build. And if you're, you know, you got to be wise how you're going to spend it as well.
Well, and I just want to, if I can, yeah, I'm just a commodity, and I understand that. I mean, anybody who's sitting in my position or any one of the other 149 positions in the state, we're just a commodity for the departments, for the governor, for the lobbyists, for the constituents, right? I mean, that's what we do. And it's very interesting because a lot of times I'll get a comment saying, oh, I'm your constituent and I'm a taxpayer. Well, so are the other million people in our state as well. And when I ran very clearly, you know, where my value system is. And yes, we're all taxpayers and we're all constituents of Montana, but then I have to apply that as well. And so I realize that. So all I have is my word. My yes has got to be yes. My no has got to be my no. And that's something that's very important to me. So if I'm going to vote one way or vote another way, and, you know, somebody had once said, Kerry, don't come across as so conservative. I said, but even if I lose this race, I don't want there to ever be a surprise, but I also am really good at not going after people. I don't attack people. I just attack the policy itself, because my number one goal when I hit that floor every single morning is that I am there to love people. That's it. It's nothing else but to love people is the strongest value that I bring with me. Now, I'm not saying I'm always great at it. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes I feel like I should throat punch some people, but no, I'm there to love people. And
you have, it's necessary to remind yourself of that, then, is what you're saying.
Yes, and that's what my support system helps me do, is remind me of that.
I'm gonna get Michael on the air here before too long, because I'm just curious about how he comes behind, you know, and supports you and girds, because you are carrying some major pieces of legislation. As we noted, you've been named Villain of the Week a time or two by Forward Montana. Mm-hmm. Again, that's wrong language in my mind, so you're certainly getting some attention in that regard. I'm going to get off of that just a little bit, because there's a few other bills that one of them is this incarceration bill that to me is rather interesting as you describe it, helping people re-enter a complicated society.
Yes. And for me, it's probably the most important bill that I will carry. And it's the one that, I mean, the other bills are very important, but to this, a lot of times you carry and you work with other organizations. This is one that is has come from my experiences, not because I was incarcerated, but because I worked with the Department of Labor for the last couple of years, and that's the area that I focused on. I do not work for the Department of Labor anymore because I just only wanted to work on reentry. I wanted to come in, and that's what this bill does, is it actually helps folks who are coming in from the justice system. Now, that can be the secured Department of Corrections. It can be pre-release. It can be working with the judges on with some of their courts that they have. It can be those coming from jail that don't actually, they kind of come in and out. But really what we have found in this state right now is that we've got a lot of really great people doing a lot of great things, but they're not working together. So we need to have some economies of scale. We need to also have a value that we are going to help those folks that are coming back in. Right now we've got about 15,000 people who are associated with the justice system in our state right now. And so if we were able to help 3,000 or 4,000 people a year, year after year after year, that not only helps those folks with training, jobs, careers, but also with family stability, also with it starting to fill those positions. Right now, we've got, 9,000 people sitting on unemployment benefits in our state and 21,000 employers looking for folks to work. We've got about a 2-to-1. I know that number is not quite there, but it's really about a it's getting between 3 and 2 to 1 jobs for every person looking for a job. And so, but these are real people who are getting out. I'm not making a judgment as to whether or not they should be in there. They shouldn't be in there. These are real people. I mean, we've got a county attorney who's doing a great job at helping, you know, put the right people into the prison system. We've talked about Bill Mercer, who's really been involved in while they're in the prison system. Now Fiona Nave is chair of Section D as well. I'm talking about that other part of that circle of helping people when they're coming out. And so we're tying together Department of Labor, Department of Corrections, Department of Commerce, actually, too, with those businesses and housing, Department of Justice with some of the courts and some of the things that they're doing as well, higher education, so that we actually have a system in place that we understand that if somebody gets released into Billings, but then they're going to go back up to Browning, or they're going to go to Lolo, or they're going to go to Glendive, that there's a support system there. So with this piece of legislation, we're tying the departments so that they are working together. But I'm also asking every one of my colleagues in the 100 districts in this state to work with me, that this is something that we can, you know, reach out, tell me what's needed in your district, because every district's going to be different, you know, from rural to urban, or, you know, east to west. Tell me what we can do to do a better job at helping those folks who are justice involved reenter, become a part of society and thrive in their families, thrive in their communities, thrive in their jobs. So thank you for letting me share about that bill.
Yeah, no, thank you for doing that. That one did pass third reading, so that got over to the Senate side before the transmittal break. And so that can move forward. As you go through and you know investigate these bills, you learn an awful lot.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask a simple question. Do we have a good balance of security, and rehabilitation in our penal system? How is it working, I guess? And I'm just using those two areas, security and rehabilitation, because that's two of the main functions of that penal system.
Absolutely. And they're both very costly. I mean, if we're looking at what the price per day per prisoner is, it's probably around $125 a day, because you've also got medical, you've got education in there. So rehabilitation could be a part of that as well. But I'm really seeing our director, Gutkin, and the staff that works with him over the last 4 years, because they came on board the same time I came on board, really working in that direction, so that reentry starts the day that somebody goes into our incarceration and starts in. And if we can start having that thought process instead of just, you know, putting somebody to be warehoused, and there's a lot of work we can do. And that's what this, we're going to, you know, through the Department of Labor, this reentry collaboration is going to be housed in Department of Labor, because I found that they're the only organization that can actually go in while somebody's insecure, and then also stay with somebody through case management all the way when they get off paper, which is when we get off paper off of the probation. That's where we find a lot of recidivism happening at that point. So if we can continue to do that, I mean, I keep hearing, well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Hey, honey, you can't even lead a horse to water sometimes. But what we got to do is provide the water. And that's what I see with this. And it's got to be statewide. We can't just say it's going to be in Billings and Great Falls and Butte. It's got to be statewide. It's got to be in Custer County and Weibo County and all over, Flathead. It's got to be everywhere.
Did you get bipartisan support?
Yes. And I have to tell you, when it first came, when it committee, I cried because it meant so much to me to see that, you know, vocal support and organizations from the unions, Carpenters Union to ACLU to the governor's office coming and saying, we support you with this. And that's what it just meant so much to me because this is really helping real people at a real place in our state.
Found out that Michael Crow and I have something in common. We both have really exceptional wives, Michael. How do you like that?
Yeah. Great ones.
Yeah. Michael Crow is with us. Carrie Seekins Crow, Representative House District 39, just finishing up here. And Michael, it's good to meet you. Carrie, thank you for coming in studio. Appreciate that. I've been looking forward to this. I know there are you get a lot of pushback because you're in an arena that's unsettled when we talk about what is the role of spirituality and morality and government's proper role there. But you have somebody who's on your side 100% of the time.
I'm blessed exceedingly abundantly. And that's the other thing, too, is that every day I go there, I'm given a measure of grace that I don't understand either. Because my natural tendency would be to hide, to go back, you know, lay under the covers and not go forward in this. But I'm lucky. I mean, my husband every day calls me when he's coming home from work. How did today go? Tell me about today. My son calls me every morning. He's like, you got this, Mom. You can do this. And, you know, my parents who live here in Billings, you know, call and encourage me. But I couldn't do what I do without such an amazing support system.
Yeah, Michael, what is it that you do to come alongside? I mean, sometimes it's a balancing, get in, step back, take a side step here. What do you do?
You have to, it's very tough. I mean, there's people that there's death threats.
That's hard. That's got to be hard for you.
And, you know, a threat needs to be eliminated in the Marine Corps world.
And thank you for your service.
And, but, you know, it's a tough thing. But the best thing I can do for Carrie is to try to help her keep her head down low and keep her powder dry and just, be that safe place that she can land. And, you know, it's her turn to serve. I did my tour in the Marine Corps, and now I got to support her, and the best way I can is just what I said.
Well, and he's phenomenal at carrying big piles of clothes when I, move to Helena. And there's a lot of weekends he'll come up there if I'm working on Saturday, or sometimes I come home too. He takes care of I don't have to worry about anything at home. There's nothing that I have to do. So he's taking care of that 100%. And it is interesting because some of the letters and the postcards come here to the house and, either one of them will go, hey, are you okay? And this session, it's not as big before, like last session, the NBC had filed a report on me saying that I'm the GOP mom who encouraged my daughter to commit suicide instead of transition, which is not true. I mean, my daughter did not, first of all, she's still alive. She's actually in the Navy and she didn't transition. So it was based fully on a lie. But that, of course, got picked up and rebroadcast. And then, I bet I was getting, 10,000 threats a day. It was so amazing. But we're here. Blessed.
That goes back to that last session too, and that was a horrible, egregious example of the misleading gone wrong. Michael, what would be your advice? I got less than a minute here. What would be your advice to other husbands out there?
Just support them and let them serve. And you just gotta take the good with the bad. And it's all over in 4 months.
There you go. And then the election campaign comes alongside too, and you're busy with that.
And he's great at putting up signs. So I want, I got my own sign guy, so he's wonderful at that.
An anniversary. 35 years ago on St. Paddy's Day, You guys met.
In a bar in Washington, D.C. Here we are. We give everybody hope. No advice, just hope.
That's good. That's good. Hey, thank you for your service.
What
thank
an you. Honor to be here with you today.
Thank you both. I appreciate you both coming. You're always welcome, all right?
All right.
Okay.
I'll see you in May.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Deep breaths. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.